everyone. Welcome to a special bonus edition of the 2QB Experience. This is episode 29, and we're calling it the Scott Fishbowl Experience. We are taking an in-depth look at the Scott Fishbowl with the creator of it, Scott Fish. Scott is on the other line. He is at ScottFish24 on Twitter. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing awesome. It's been a fun year, a crazy year in SFB. I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, so just to give a little bit of insight, because I'm not sure all of our listeners are familiar with the Scott Fishbowl, it's a 480-team tournament of fantasy football, 8 different conferences with 5, you know, divisions or leagues each, so 40 separate 12-team leagues, super flex with a lot of other just general flex spots, 11 bench, so 22 roster spots altogether. We go really deep in this format. Scott, can you talk a little bit about what sets this apart from like a lot of other leagues scoring-wise?
I think one of the main things is that it is super flex, which is generally, I mean, you basically play it out with rosters this deep, you play it out like a 2QB league. But it also has a quarter point per carry, which does count for quarterbacks. So you gotta love those Mariotas. Well, not last week, he didn't run very much, but the Mariotas and the Winstons, the Cams, the even Rodgers, Alex Smith, those guys get a little bump from that. Russell Wilson. And you only get half point PPR for players, and you get an extra half for tight ends. So tight ends get 1.0 PPR. So everybody gets a little bit of a bonus in some way or another.
Yeah, and there was a lot of strategy that went into the drafts way back when they started in the early off season about, you know, how to wait for these different scoring settings and people drafting running backs a little higher than they normally would. Even, you know, zero RB zealots, going in on running back to lead off their drafts. It was a lot of fun. For more information, you can always find it at scottfishbowl.com. Scott, you did change some of these rules between last year and this year. Do you anticipate more changes for next season?
Yep. I'm not 100% positive on what I'm going to change, but I change it every single year. I think part of it is, it really makes that July period of drafting and pre-drafting fun in that people can't just go off of last year. They have to actually use their brains a little bit and try to strategize what every change is going to do. I feel like a lot of analysts in the industry, we're so used to looking at standard-ish leagues or PPR leagues. I want to make it interesting and fun and also challenging, and I feel that does that. I'm really, really looking into point per first down for next year.
Point per first down, I've never played with that before, but yeah, how does that work for quarterbacks versus, you know, running backs and receivers? Would you just not count it for quarterbacks?
That is the talk, that we'd have to make it less for quarterbacks or maybe not at all. I haven't crunched the numbers on it. I crunch the numbers a whole lot each season. It's going to turn out for the third year in a row, I will have correctly predicted the points per game you would have had to hit to make the playoffs. I do a lot of number crunching. And right now, I think I'm probably going to leave quarterbacks off for the points per first down, but I don't know until I do the numbers. I know that that system does bump running backs a little bit more.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how you shake things up, because like you said, it's such a challenge to take a look at a brand new format and try to figure it out, you know, break down the game and find where you can get those edges in a draft, because everybody has, you know, those same restrictions, right? It's super fun. This is like my favorite part of fantasy football, is like the game design, not necessarily like the game theory, but like how you put the pieces on the board, you know, before the game is played. Does that make sense?
Yep. No, that's exactly the way I am too. I have a lot more fun, well, obviously commissioning, but putting it together, figuring out what the best strategy will be. I love that. I absolutely love that. I created a new dynasty league this last summer, and I tried a strategy I've never tried before, and I'm really, really anxious to find out how that works out.
Nice. Our normal co-host, Joshua Lake, is not here. He's under the weather. I'm not totally convinced he isn't trying to avoid jinxing his team because he's currently number 18 on the SFB leaderboard. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt this time. But he did have a few questions. I'm going to kind of sprinkle those in as we go. And one of his was, have the scoring changes increased the number of top teams with multiple good running backs this year, you know, relative to other positions? Have you noticed anything like that?
I don't know if it's the scoring changes as much as it's guys like after Lev Bell's suspension, he stayed healthy, and Ezekiel Elliott, he's a first round pick. He's been healthy all year. David Johnson was a first round pick. He's been healthy all year. I think last year there were just so many running back injuries that's a hard one to figure out if that's increased the number of top teams. But, man, I should really take a good look into the top teams and see exactly how they play out. I know last year in the top 10 teams, I think half of them had two stud quarterbacks, which I found pretty interesting.
Yeah, and that's not too surprising given the Superflex format, especially for maybe a lot of drafters who aren't used to adding value to the quarterback position in that format. You know, if you're someone who came into the SFB from, you know, a standard league or a one QB league background, I can understand how you might misweight the value of quarterbacks, or you might, you know, overweight it and that could pay off as well. So I don't know. One of the big reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast, Scott, was to talk about the fact that we are in week 11. Now you're watching the Saints and Panthers play right now. I can't. I'm in my office. But anyway, the playoffs for the Scott Fishbowl, they start a week early. They start in week 13. Mm-hmm. Each division runs its own league playoff, you know, similar to just your standard league. But there's also, you know, the big kahuna prize for, you know, the tournament across all leagues, 240 different teams. Have you started to look into, you know, prep for the playoffs? Like, are you already tinkering with your roster, trying to figure out, like, how your playoff schedule is going to line up and all that?
Well, I'm not, because I am I believe I'm 3-7.
Oh no! How are your points though?
Yeah, my points aren't even enough to get me into the playoffs. For those listening, if they don't know, SFB has a rather unique system that I've actually brought into my other leagues because I feel it avoids teams that get bad beats. Half the teams get in on record and half the teams get in on points, basically. So a 3-7 team could make the playoffs if they've just had bad luck, but they are scoring a lot of points. That is not me, however. So I'm not really prepping for the playoffs, but I am still participating in waivers and setting my lineups and trying to win games. I just, play party pooper or whatever.
No, it's because you're a good human being and you don't want the leagues to go to shit when people stop paying attention. That's like the worst thing you could ever do.
Exactly.
I like that you give buys to some of the teams in the first round. How many teams get a buy?
40 total. So it's 10 per
conference.
80 total. Yeah, it's 10 per conference. Five on wins and five on points in each conference. So a lot of teams get buys. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's the best way I can do this playoff system, I think. I really do like that.
Well, and you're rewarding the teams that do, you know, have a good regular season. And another rule that I really like that you've implemented is this one, and I'd never seen this done anywhere else before, was that you, in week 13, the first round of the playoffs, all of the playoff teams who are active add their average score from the regular season to their, you know, weekly score. So if you do better in the regular season, you have a better shot to win in the first round of the playoffs. I think that's like an interesting, it's almost like a home field advantage, right?
Yep. That we added that last year, and that is,
it's brilliant.
It's probably one of my favorite rules this thing has ever added. People in the survey after the season, people just absolutely loved it. If you make the playoffs and you're a better team, it really sucks to have that one week, your week 13, be just like everybody has a bad week every once in a while, and you don't want to be blown out of the playoffs in the first week of the playoffs on a bad beat. So that really, really, really does help. I love that. I love that rule.
Yeah, it's a great rule. Something that I've always hated about head-to-head playoffs, like not just in fantasy football, but, you know, fantasy basketball, fantasy baseball, if you play any of those as well, is how, you know, head-to-head playoffs, they marginalize regular season success. That first round, like you said, if you just have a bad week, you're out. And that doesn't really jive with me when the bulk of the season is spent, you know, in those first 12 weeks or 13 weeks in a traditional fantasy setup. So, I love it. I can't say enough good things about it.
I hate head-to-head playoffs so much that my home league is the only one that I still do it outside of championship weeks. Like SFB, the top half advance each week. You're not playing anyone head-to-head. You're playing all the other teams that week, and half of you advance.
Is that how the divisional playoffs work as well?
It is. It is. Six teams make the divisional playoffs, two get byes, and four play in week one, week 13. And two advance, and then the next four play, and then two advance, and then it's a head-to-head.
As I'm talking to you, Scott, it's crazy how you just remember all these rules off the top of your head.
Well, it is year six this year, so, and the playoffs have seen little change as far as that's concerned. I mean, we added the week 13 rule, and we added the second chance dance, but I've done this kind of playoff system in many of my leagues over the last few years, just because I really, really, I don't like head-to-head playoffs because of bad beats. And I also like getting people in half on wins, half on points. I think that you just avoid that team that just hits the wrong teams a lot during a season.
Yeah, that's happening to me right now in one of my home leagues, also a two-quarterback league. And I'm just annihilated every week on points against. I've had the most points scored against me in I think like 5 or 6 weeks this season. Ooh. And my points four are pretty good. Like if this had been a Scott Fishbowl setup, I'd probably be making the playoffs, but alas, I am the commissioner of this home league, and I screwed it up, Scott. I just didn't have the foresight that you did. So you talked a little bit about how your team wasn't performing very well. I'm a little curious as to what you think went wrong. Like, was it something that happened in the draft? Did you get screwed by some injuries? What's dragging the Scott Fish team down in the Scott Fish Bowl?
I think it was just one of those bad drafts. It happens. I mean, two or three years ago, I went 1-11. I've made the playoffs every year except for that year, and it's going to be this year. And that year, I had six of my first nine picks get injured.
Wow.
So several in the preseason. Macklin had his injury thing, and Percy Harvin went out for the year. Dennis Pitta went out for the year. That was in preseason alone. But this one, I honestly can't blame anyone but myself, because I think the only guy I really lost was Andrew Luck. I mean, I have Zeke Elliott. Ladarius Green. I have Zeke Elliott. I have Andrew Luck. I have Matthew Stafford. I have players that are doing well. Moncrief, Terrell Pryor. I don't know how it's happening, but I just.
That sounds like a good squad. Yeah.
I know, right? Doug Martin, who got injured, of course.
Yeah, the Doug Martin thing has been brutal. I have him in a different league. I was actually lucky enough to land David Johnson near the end of the first round. I think I got him at the eighth pick in my division. And Adrian Peterson made it back to me in the second round. So I started off with that, you know, real heavy slant towards the quarter point per carry angle. And, you know, AP, we lost him. But in general, my team's performing pretty well. Looks like I'm going to make the playoffs. I think I have 5 or 6 wins right now. And I think I have enough points to qualify as well. It's been a fun ride. The thing I've had the most fun with, I think, is playing kind of random receivers. You know, I've scored a lot of points with guys like Seth Roberts and Marquise Lee and Tyreek Hill, you know, guys that I scooped up off the waiver wire, and it's been a ton of fun, and it's a grind every week because these leagues are so competitive. How does like the competition level of this compare to the other leagues you play in, Scott?
I would say I hear the most about it, whether it be email or Twitter. I only have really one other league where I feel like it's as competitive and there's as much chatter. But yeah, it is really competitive. it seems like there's a decent amount of Twitter trash talk when teams play each other, which I like. To your point, as far as loving playing random wide receivers, that is something I get a lot. I hear a lot of that. I believe Matt Kelly mentioned the other day that he thanked me for having a league where you could start 11 players and 7 flexes so that, or 7 wide receivers so that he could get Jeff Janis into his lineup.
He's a Janis truther, I guess.
Yep.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah, it's been a ton of fun. Like, my wide receiver core right now is, yeah, a lot of those guys I listed. And then I have, like, the only real guys that I drafted, I think, are Demaryius Thomas and DeSean Jackson, which, you know, and neither of those guys has been lighting the world on fire. DT's been fine, but Jackson hasn't been great. Like, he's actually been outscored by Marquise Lee in these settings. It's insane.
Jeez. Yeah, that is going to happen. I did lose Sammy Watkins to injury, I suppose. I'm remembering now, but I was just thinking as you mentioned that, I'm like, my wide receivers are better than that, and I'm nowhere near the playoffs.
Yeah. Did you drop Watkins, or are you holding him for, like, hope against hope here?
I hate to admit it. I have been holding him, hoping, and doesn't look like I'm ever going to get to play him. I thought maybe if I make the playoffs, he could be a game changer for me, but.
Yeah, I drafted him with Tyrod Taylor in the hope that, you know, maybe in the playoffs I could get some variance that way, you know, with the stack, kind of like you would in DFS. I did the same thing with Andy Dalton and Tyler Eifert, but yeah, lost Watkins. I dropped him almost immediately, though. I'm typically not the type of player who likes to wait around for guys to get healthy. AP is the exception here, but only because the rest of those Minnesota running backs have been so uninspiring.
So who are your quarterbacks in this?
So I drafted Dalton, Tyrod, Kaepernick, and Gabbert. And in season, I picked up Cody Kessler, and I have since dropped Blaine Gabbert. So my quarterbacks are not exciting or sexy to look at, but they have been getting the job done.
Yeah, you can always get – you have three at least most weeks to choose from.
That's right. And and I tend to be the type of two quarterback drafter who doesn't go after the high price guys. I tend to, you know, lean on players like Taylor, like Dalton, like, I don't know, Phil Rivers, Joe Flacco, that tier of kind of QB twos, and hope that they can get me there while, you know, the rest of my team is in theory good. You know, it doesn't always work out that way, but you know.
Gotcha. Yeah. This league has a pretty long history of one stud quarterback, one middle quarterback, and one quarterback that came out of nowhere, like Kaepernick or Dak being on the, you know, winning or top two or three team.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm going to weave in another question here from Josh, and he asked, as the playoffs approach, there are still 3 undefeated teams left, and he says that seems kind of improbable to him. Is there any precedent for 3 undefeated teams after 10 weeks?
No. In fact, there's only ever been one undefeated team to make it 10 weeks, and that team did go undefeated for the entire season.
That's incredible.
Otherwise, it's never happened through 10 weeks. Only one team has ever done it.
Do you remember who that was?
Greg Kellogg, Fantasy Hall of Famer, actually. He was in the first group of Fantasy Hall of Famer with Fabiano and Matthew Berry and all them, Scott Engel. Greg Kellogg, who used to do Kellogg's Comments and wrote for a lot of places, Fantasy Sharks. He's now retired. He's out of the industry now. But, yeah, he 2 years ago, I believe, he went undefeated.
Still, that is incredible. Well done, Greg. Yeah. All right, one more from Josh. He says, this year's 480 teams feels like a ton, but next year you're expanding to 720. How do you imagine that'll change things? I mean, besides just making a ton more work for you to do.
Honestly, I don't really want to increase it, but there are, at this moment, well over 2,000 people signed up. And holy I'm the cow. Kind of guy, I want people to be happy, and that draft time is just really, really fun with a lot of people talking about it. I think next year I'm going to have to be a little less. I'm already less strict this year, but even more less strict about getting on people. It's going to be a challenge. I might have to get some co-commissioners to try to help me out, but I'm not going to set that 720. That 720 is tentatively in stone, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, all right. I won't hold you to it.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to do it, but we'll see. Because 480 feels like a lot, and it also feels like I think if you add too many people, it doesn't feel like a knit community at that point. You know, it starts to just spread out and it starts to just be a thing that everybody does or something, you know?
That's totally fair. And I will admit that, you know, just the competitive person in me does think that the more teams you add, the more it just kind of becomes like the lottery and yes. stops being about, you know, the people who really do have that skill to finish well in a big fantasy football tournament.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There are definitely a lot of pros and a lot of cons with, you get the more the merrier thing, you get the, you know, everybody gets to play and it's this big community connecting event, but also, yeah, the bigger you get, like you said, it becomes more lottery like, and a lot of people do find it less fun.
Yeah. So I want to transition now and, talk a little bit about some data that, our good friend at 2QBs, Josh Hornsby at Fantasy ADHD, helped pull on the Scott Fishbowl. He pulled out data on the average wins, average points scored for each individual player. So we can see like the win differential that, say, Ezekiel Elliott gives you on average between all these different leagues. So across 40 leagues, if you own Zeke, on average, those teams have won 6.5 games and lost 3.5 games for a win differential of 3 wins. Like, that's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sitting here looking at this. Luck is like 5.72 wins and Zeke is 6.5 wins. This is really interesting. Really, really interesting.
The thing that jumps out to me is how few wide receivers are in that top 30 or so. It's mostly running backs, quarterbacks, and tight ends. I think in the top 30,
yeah,
there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wide receivers in the top 30.
You know,
and they wouldn't be names you'd expect either.
It looks like the tight end premium does not really make much damage either. It looks exactly like you would expect: Gronkowski in the top 15 and Jordan Reed in the mid 30s, etc. But yeah, there are not a lot of wide receivers. As opposed to, if you think of PPR league, I mean, like probably 7 out of the 10 are wide receivers. But in this, you only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 6, 7 in the top 20, 7 wide receivers.
Yeah, and that's – do you feel like that's enough or not enough?
I feel like it's a good smattering, right? I mean, 4 quarterbacks, 7 wide receivers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 running backs, and a tight end. I mean, it almost feels just like evened out.
Which tab are you looking at right now, Scott?
Wins slash FP by ADP.
By ADP. Okay, so that's sorted by ADP.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, if you go over...
Oh, wow, if I go to win differential. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, go to the win differential. Check this out. Look at how many running backs are in there. It's a lot.
Oh, that... Yeah, I was definitely on the wrong tab. It's weird looking at teams with Matt Asiata getting 5.8 wins.
And again, we don't know when these people picked up all these players. We know they didn't trade for them because there's no trading in the Scott Fishbowl. But you look at it, and the number one win differential guy is Melvin Gordon. Mm-hmm. On average, his owners have won almost 6.6 games in the Scott Fishbowl. Zeke is number 2. Aaron Rodgers is number 3. But yeah, you don't even hit a tight end or a wide receiver till number 10, and that's Delanie Walker. You don't hit a wide receiver until number, 16 in Emmanuel Sanders. But yeah, it definitely looks like it paid to pay that running back premium. And that was something that a lot of analysts theorized over and went after in the draft.
Yeah, it's I will say this about looking at this list. A lot of these show later picks or possibly free agents, which
correct.
Really, I think that this is the kind of league that might be, I don't want to say it's one in your flex, but I feel like those later flex spots, because there's so many flex spots, if you find a guy like a Jacquizz Rodgers, who's number 12 on this list, that can be in your flex for a couple games and get you those 20, 30 point games that he did, that's really, really going to, you know, add to that average win.
Yeah, this is like the crossroads between where you can find advantages in the scoring. And I think that running back is that position. And the other road that's coming through here is just that road of value, right? You know, you see LeGarrette Blount, you see DeMarco Murray and Matt Forte, guys who were faded by a lot of industry people in the offseason. And because they've, you know, outperformed expectations and you were able to draft them a little bit cheaper, on top of the fact that they play, you know, the premium position of the format, that makes them, that makes your team better, right? And that's pretty intuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and these are all workhorse running backs too. I've never seen that they're all like with that quarter point per carry. That's really adding up, it looks like.
Yeah, definitely. We can also look at it by just average points, points for, and in that case, Melvin Gordon is still number one. That's the next tab over on that spreadsheet I sent you.
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers bumps up to number two there. On average, teams with Aaron Rodgers have scored 1,574 points, give or take a couple decimal.
I'm just thinking to myself, Rodgers, what his ADP was 15.2. Wow, that seems high. I believe it, but man, that seems high. But in a 2QB, I suppose a lot of those teams got to get a stud at the back end of the first, and then got Rodgers around the corner. That would make sense.
And isn't it funny how we've spent a lot of weeks this season, not every week, but a lot of weeks wondering what the hell is wrong with Aaron Rodgers. clearly nothing is wrong with Aaron Rodgers. He is still delivering fantasy goodness in the Scott Fishbowl. That's for sure.
Yep. Yeah. It really does appear that way. That's a lot of points. 1573.
Yeah. The other thing when we switch over to points instead of wins, you do see is the quarterbacks start to creep up a little bit more. Like Drew Brees, Mariota, Andrew Luck are all a little bit higher than they were on sorting by win differential. And you see more wide receivers creep up here too. You know, the guys who, again, were values. Marvin Jones, Stephon Diggs, Michael Crabtree are the top three wide receivers by that. Now I want to get a little melancholy with you, Scott. I want to scroll to the bottom of these pages and look at some of the worst players. How does that sound?
That sounds good. Ooh, Dez Bryant.
Yeah. So if we look down at the, like, are you on the win differential or the points page?
I was on the points, but I can switch.
No, you're good. Let's stay there. Yeah. Dez Bryant, Carson Palmer, Deion Lewis, DeAndre Hopkins, Doug Martin. If you drafted those guys, on average, those teams have not scored very many points this year. Those are the bottom guys. And that kind of makes sense too, right? These guys who underperformed preseason expectations, right?
Yeah, Deion Lewis hasn't played, really. And Doug Martin missed a lot of games. Dez missed some time. And even when he was there, Cole Beasley was stealing work. Yeah, and DeAndre Hopkins, everyone listening to this knows what's been happening with him this year.
So. Yeah, ADP of 11.3 for Hopkins. That is just, yeah, what a brutal disappointment he's been.
Oh, man, yeah, first rounder. And, yeah, if you paired him with, well, I'm trying to think of who went around the corner. But
for him and Dez, if you went zero RB.
Yeah, it could have been him and Dez. Oh, that would have been painful.
Yeah, and just in general, like I should have noted ahead of time that when we're looking at these spreadsheets, these are only players who are owned in 75% of divisions or more, so at least 30 of the different leagues. So we're not looking at, you know, the lesser owned players here, but this does cover most of the big names who did get drafted. On the win differential side, bottom of the barrel, a lot of the same names. The very last player is Dez. Win differential of negative 2.2 wins. So if you drafted Dez, you probably have lost two extra games this year. That sucks.
Oh, man. Yeah. I wonder what, I know that Sammy Watkins is not on this list because I doubt he's owned in 30 of the 40 leagues. But man, I would really wonder what his is. It's got to be pretty low because a lot of people spend a second, maybe a third on him, but
I can look at that. So win differential, not too bad. He's only minus 0.06. In points. Yeah. In points, the point differential is negative 10.4. So I think that what probably happened is a lot of people got out from under Sammy.
Right.
or just found a solution for not having him in their roster. He's actually still owned in 39 different leagues.
Wow. Wow.
That's surprising. I didn't even realize that.
Well, a lot of people taking shots, maybe, you know, trying to prepare for the playoffs here. They're grabbing their Ladarius Greens and their Sammy Watkins. And I would not even be shocked to see a few Adrian Petersons get picked up here at some point, just in case.
Well, like I said, I held him for that reason.
With 22 man rosters, I mean, you generally have space.
Yeah, you have room to stash some guys, and that's been a lot of fun too. And there's that game theory to it where you're saying, okay, I know this guy's not going to help me now, but when I get to the playoffs, you know, fingers crossed, that's when I really need my team to be as explosive as possible if I'm going to beat how many teams is it? 240 or is it more than that?
Nope, it's 240 in the playoffs.
240, holy cow! Getting back to the bottom of the barrel win differential guys. Todd Gurley is the second worst. Doug Martin's the third worst. Dante Moncrief is the fourth worst, which surprises me a little bit, especially when you compare him to somebody like Watkins. You know, both of these guys were drafted relatively highly, but both of them got injured, and we knew they weren't playing. I'm curious as to why Moncrief is so much lower, especially because he was probably cheaper than Watkins on draft day.
I wonder if it's the mindset of the Moncrief buyer, like me, who also drafted guys like Tyler Lockett and, you know, like...
Oh, bought the hype, you're saying.
Yeah, maybe they bought a lot of hype guys and it did a couple of those other ones didn't pan out, like my team. But I did buy Zeke and Luck. You'd think I would have done better there. But I bought Moncrief, but I also bought Lockett pretty high, and that burnt me.
No, that's a very interesting theory. I like that. Man, yeah, because I will admit that when I drafted Watkins, I felt like I was getting him lower than I would have in another league, you know? Like, I felt like he was being discounted because of his injury concerns. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, they cropped up. But at the same time, I wasn't paying, like, his ceiling's worth of value for him. Whereas a guy like Moncrief was probably drafted at or above his ceiling in most of these leagues, right?
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I have to imagine because he was really hyped right then. I wouldn't doubt if this happened in late July, so I wouldn't even doubt if that the people drafting Moncrief went after guys like, well, definitely Lockett or like John Brown or something too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, guys like that. Kobe Fleener was a real hype guy. I mean, if you went after a bunch of those guys, you could have been really hurt this year.
Yep. Just running through just some other positions here at the bottom of the win share pile. Will Tye is your worst tight end. Zach Ertz and Dwayne Allen right after him. That kind of makes sense. Those guys have all been disappointments for the most part. Quarterbacks at the bottom are Jay Cutler, Tony Romo, Carson Palmer. And Kirk Cousins is the next guy up from the bottom. And I'm surprised because Cousins hasn't been that bad.
No, he's actually been pretty decent. That is surprising. I wonder if it's... Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to take a look at the teams that he's on, but I can't mentally figure out why he'd be so low on this list for wins.
Well, that could be another issue with the hype, right? Like Moncrief, Cousins had a great year last year and a very strong finish in 2015. So maybe, you know, based on that, people were buying him above his actual value or what, you know, what they should have paid for him. So I could see that. That kind of makes sense. Now, a couple more spots up, Derek Carr. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me because, yeah, he was probably – I mean, he was actually drafted ahead of Cousins just barely, ADP of about 63 versus Cousins 67. But Carr's had a great year.
Yeah, that is really weird. You can't sit there and explain it away like, oh, they drafted Carr so high that they missed out on a player that, you know, could be helping their team plus a later quarterback or something. You can't even make that argument. I don't know why he's that high. I mean, Gronkowski being, you know, right down there as well with Carr, that makes sense because he missed games. And he even played a couple of the games he played and he got nothing and people started him. So that makes sense. But Carr, man, he's been unreal.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else you're seeing on here that jumps out to you? We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this. I just wanted to run through
Just above Carr, it's really surprising Tom Brady. I know Tom Brady Tom Brady's almost as low as Carr, and he has been absolutely ridiculous. And you would have figured it's not you would have figured that the teams that drafted Tom Brady would have prepared for that suspension and had other quarterbacks in place to get him through those 4 weeks. So I'm kind of surprised that those teams did so poorly, even knowing he was going to be out.
It might be the fact that if you did prepare, that it put just a little bit too much strain on your roster, you know, having to draft that extra quarterback for the first 4 weeks. Maybe that impacts what you were able to do at wide receiver, running back, and tight end, right?
Wow, that's a great point. I should have thought of that.
Well, I don't know. I thought about this a lot because I had to figure out, you know, for two QBs where to like slot him in rankings and things like that. But it is tricky when you know these guys are going to miss time. But I mean, above all, what we see is that the big win differential players are the guys who are putting up elite numbers, you know, all year. And that's why, you know, Gordon, Elliott, Aaron Rodgers, DeMarco Murray, Matt Forte, Drew Brees, LeGarrette Blount. That's the list. That's the top tier.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been hurt. They haven't missed games. You know, they're not splitting workload with anybody like a Tom Brady or even a Rob Gronkowski with Martellus Bennett. It's all about the value you paid for these guys and what they actually delivered. So that's nothing new in fantasy football. That's the whole crux of the game, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Let's go a little more meta on the Tom Brady thing. Sorry to backtrack.
No, let's do it.
Do you think this says that possibly if you have a player like a Lev Bell or a Tom Brady that you know is a stud, that knows is going to be suspended, don't overcompensate at that position trying to make up for the couple weeks they're going to be out? Do you think that would help?
I think it would, but I mean, the problem with that is that you still need to do something, right? You can't...
Right.
Completely ignore it. You have to, yeah, it's weird because you have to assign the right amount of weight to it, right? Where you would, I don't know, like, I guess you couldn't draft Tom Brady and go for two other good quarterbacks. You would really have to kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel for probably your third QB. That's a really good question. I don't know. What do you think?
I think with the QB position, it's even in two QB leagues, it's a little easier to play it out normally, because I normally go after three QBs or even four in a two QB league. I'm just saying two QB instead of Superflex, but
no, that's fine. I play same difference.
Yeah, I play in the same. So,
I
think you can just go your normal route and hope that the QBs you get can, you know, bridge the gap. But at a position like running back, I think you're right. I think you might be losing games up front if you even try that. I don't think running back has been deep enough lately.
Yeah, Bell slots in at number, 49, 51? I'm losing my math skills here. He had an ADP of 3.1, but an average win differential of 0.76. So he was up there. Like, he's having a good year relative to someone like Brady. I wonder if just because the supply of running backs is higher, that maybe that's a little easier to deal with than someone like Brady.
Yeah, maybe playing matchups, or I'm trying to remember how the beginning of the season went with running backs, but I suppose you could have picked up Asiata for week three, you know, and gotten a touchdown and a few points there and stuff like that. I guess it just feels like it'd be easier with quarterbacks just because
their production is so replaceable, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can play your normal strategy and still get production there. Oh.
Yeah. I think just that because there's fewer of them relative to running back, like the competition for them in the draft and on the waiver wire is probably a little more fierce.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Whereas definitely. With running back, you have all these committees where, you know, especially in a format like this with half point PPR, I know it's not full point, but a guy like, let's say, like Chris Thompson on Washington, he's a guy who probably wasn't drafted very high, but he's been fine for fantasy, especially in PPR formats. He's been a serviceable guy you could run out there in most weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those guys are always nice in half point PPR and PPR, but in regular leagues, I feel like if you pull the PPR away, I can't even imagine what it's like in standard leagues for running backs right now.
Oh, it's got to be a wasteland.
I can't even imagine what it was like last year. I didn't play in any. I was just thinking as you were saying that, is Chris Thompson even have any value in a standard league?
No, not really. I only play in a couple anymore. Like, most of my leagues are either full or half point PPR. And the ones that I'm in, like, it's all just about touchdowns and if your league has them, yardage bonuses. And God, I friggin' hate yardage bonuses.
See, this is so do I. I absolutely hate yardage bonuses.
It's like if my guy gets 99 yards, that's no extra points. But if my guy gets one extra yard, suddenly he gets an extra 3 points. Screw that. That's a dumb rule.
See, this is one of the things that's making it tough for me with the points per first down, because arguably the best way to do it is to scrap PPR and go points per first down, because when a wide receiver gets a reception, a lot of the time, because average reception is what, 15 yards or something like that, if you go down the middle of the road, it feels like they get, wide receivers get a first down on many of their receptions. The idea with points per first down is that you scrap PPR, but then it also really does kill value on some of those running backs like Chris Thompson, who probably isn't getting a ton of first downs, and his receptions probably aren't counting for first downs.
Yeah, but if you're looking at these results, like the average win differential, like we said, like most of the top guys are running backs anyway. Like, maybe running back as a position could afford to take a hit. I'm not sure.
That's a good point.
I don't know, though, because like you said, it's less about, like, these are just the elite guys who are rising to the top. But if we, like, you know, slide down into the middle, like, you're right, the Chris Thompsons of the world, the Darren Sproles, like, without PPR, like, those guys might just not be playable at all.
Yeah, that is part of my reluctance, is because we have 22 man rosters, and if we devalue the bottom half, like, I think that making it tight end premium brings extra tight ends into play. I don't think it bumps them up too much. I just think it makes that bottom actually playable.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, if I do that to running backs, then we're just going to lose players that could be flex plays and could be on rosters.
Yeah. I'm wondering if, like, could you just shift the PPR settings even further, instead of granting the same value for both running backs and wide receivers, do like quarter point for wide receiver, half point for running back, and then the full point for tight end. Have you considered anything like that?
I have considered that. This is such a dumb thing to concern myself with, but I do every year. Lots of podcasts talk about this, and I try to explain it on Twitter. And when a podcast has to take 2 minutes trying to explain the scoring to its listeners, I feel sick to my stomach and bad every time. So if we go to staggered PPR plus point per first down, tight end premium, points per carry, it gets to the point where not only is it tough to describe on podcasts, I think it is going to confuse some regular listeners and some people even starting out trying to play the league at first.
Yeah, that's very fair.
It's a lot to account for.
Yeah, there's something to be said about the elegance of a format.
And simplicity,
there are a lot of rules here in the Scott Fish Bowl, but for the most part, they're easy to understand. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why so many people enjoy it. I've taken up a lot of your time, Scott. I don't want to dive too much further into this data, so I have just a few more questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so let's talk predictions. Do you have any predictions down the stretch here? First, I want to ask if you think there are any maybe like players that you would look for to have a big finish to the season that maybe people might not expect.
Whew, players. I haven't really put a lot of thought into players that I think are going to have a great down the stretch. I've been kind of riding. I've been riding a lot of hot hands this season. I wonder if Cameron Meredith is going to be the kind of guy that wins some leagues.
Or Eddie Royal for the same reason, right?
Or Eddie Royal, a guy that you got free that is just an additional flex that's going to now score major points. Guys like that, I think, are going to be really interesting. As far as teams, you mentioned predictions. Was there a question for that, or I was?
Oh,
I
yeah, was, no, that was where I was going next. Do you like any of these teams? Like we said earlier, we have three undefeated teams. Mm-hmm. That's got to be a huge advantage heading into the playoffs. There you know, a lot of people are going to make the playoffs. So anybody catching your eye, anybody who you know has been doing a little extra research to try to take this thing down?
You know, Jeff Perry has led wire to wire for about 5 weeks now. And when you look at his team, it is really good. There are some really good teams. Adam Stroik's team is really good. I can't believe it, but first round QB Kenny Darter is
Kenny Darter.
He's just killing it as well. But if I have to make a prediction, I want to stay with what I said on the podcast before the season. Kevin Cole,
how's he doing so far? I haven't looked at his roster.
Ninth overall, 8-2, 17-58.
Which division is he in?
He's in Liam Neeson. ass kickers,
that figures.
Yeah, so he was my prediction before the season. He was the top point scorer last year. It seems like he really, I don't know, he's got some kind of inside knowledge of how to do this league or something. I don't get it, but last year I was just seriously impressed by him, so he was my prediction, and I'm kind of hoping he takes it this year after taking the point win last year.
He does have a really nice team. I'm looking at it right now, carrying five QBs, including Tony Romo and Robert Griffin III. So there's that stashing we're talking about. His other guys are Bryce Petty, Cody Kessler, and Case Keenum. Get out of here with that quarterback squad.
Yeah, that's wow. Wow.
But you might imagine, with QBs like that, the rest of his team is pretty loaded. You know, he has Le'Veon Bell, he has Melvin Gordon, he has Mark Ingram, he has LeSean McCoy. And then he has Jaquizz Rodgers, Damian Williams, and D'Angelo Williams, because why not? At wide receiver, he's got Diggs, Hilton, Jordan Matthews, Devontae Parker, Mike Wallace, and one of my favorite players of the season, Tyrell Williams. And his tight ends are fine, too. Cameron Brait, Charles Clay, Antonio Gates. Like, it doesn't matter that his quarterbacks are hot garbage, because his other players are all fantastic.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. I remember him tweeting the other day that he was starting Kessler and Keenum, and he's somehow got this team. But yeah, if Romo ends up starting at any point, which I don't think he will at this point now after the conference and whatnot, he could really, really make a run.
This sets up for something pretty extraordinary, right? We could get a Kevin Cole, Kenny Darter showdown, you know, first round QB versus the epitome of a late round QB roster right here.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. That would be an amazing final. I mean, the final is 10 teams, winner take all, but it would be hilarious if those are two of the final teams. This really does say a lot about late round QB in this, because I believe he did this last year too, and he's made it this far.
Yeah, very impressive. Good luck to Kevin Cole. I hope you lose to me in that 10-team final. I hope everyone loses to me in the 10-team final. Last thing, I want to wrap up a little bit. We talked about how this is a lot of work for you, Scott, and I'm wondering how people can thank you, how they can help support you. I know you do a lot of work for charity. Do you want to talk about that stuff for a little bit?
You don't need to thank me. That's first off. This is a labor of love. I really, really enjoy doing this, and I really enjoy that people enjoy it. So that's all I really need. I do put out a survey for the participants at the end of the year. Answering questions on that survey would be appreciated. But I also run a Toys for Tots charity. You can go to fantasycares.net, and we did hit a goal of $6,000.
That's awesome.
We're gonna go buy $6,000 worth of toys, which is unreal. Ooh. I mean, if anyone's listening and you have kids and you know what it's like to see your kid get a new toy, imagine being able to give toys to kids that don't normally get toys, and just imagine those faces, like what it's like for a kid that doesn't usually get toys and they get a brand new awesome toy. It's just the thought of that makes me so happy, and this industry has done so much this year, donating $6,000. If you want to donate more, if you want to donate next year, if you want to hold off and check out my Twitter timeline and find it next year and donate some, so we can get some going then. That would be amazing. But seriously, I don't need thanks for it. I just truly love doing this.
All right, a couple more things. I know you talked about how you already have 2,000 people signed up, and I'm not sure you want to willingly solicit for more entrants, but if people want to, how can they try to sign up for next year's Scott Fishbowl?
You can go to scottfishbowl.com, and I believe it's pretty easy. I think it's the first thing on the navigation bar. I actually do still promote how to sign up, because every year it starts up, the drafts start up, and everybody is talking about it on Twitter. It's a trending topic in some states. I believe it got up to number 2 nationally last year or something, or maybe it was just in certain states. Tim Duncan retired and made it number 2. Tim Duncan retired.
How dare you, Duncan?
Yeah, exactly. But when they do that, people, you know, contact me. How do I get in this? I never heard of this. So I do like to promote it. So at least you can sign up and have a chance at getting in. So I do keep promoting how to sign up. Just go to scottfishbowl.com and you can find it pretty easily.
Cool. Now, aside from that, is there any other way that people can find your work? You know, you can plug your Twitter handle again here or anything else you want to throw out there.
Yeah, you can find me ScottFish24 on Twitter. I'm with Dynasty League Football. I do mostly stuff behind the scenes. You're not going to see any articles from me at this point. I haven't done one in probably a year and a half, but we have a lot of great writers doing a lot of great work, so you can check out their work.
Yeah, no, we love DLF at 2QBs, and you should definitely be checking that out if you're at all into Dynasty. They cover basically every angle of it, including 2 quarterback Dynasty and Superflex Dynasty. So with that said, Scott, I want to wrap things up here. I really appreciate your time. I know it's a little bit later than where I am. So can you give me one last check-in on the Thursday night football game? How's that one going?
You know, I've been paying more attention to you than the game, so I actually the game's on commercial, so I don't know how it's going. I believe it was 3-0 last I checked, but
3-0. That's it. All right. Well, shoot.
Well, that was a little bit ago, so maybe it's changed since then. I haven't seen anything now.
All right. Well, that's what Google's
looks
for.
Looks like it's 10-3.
10-3, a barn burner between two great offenses.
Yep. Oof, man. My fantasy teams are not going to like this.
Well, good luck with the fantasy teams and the Scott Fishbowl and otherwise. Thanks again for coming on. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this kind of special one-off episode. And tune in next week. We'll be back to the regular grind. Hopefully Lake will be off of his sick bed and back in good spirits. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. We'll talk to you later.